ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized, Text Number 17. No, it's 18. Please repeat. Antavantaha ime dea nityasya uktaha saririnaha anashinaha aprameyasya tasmat yudyasva bharata Antavanta ime deha nijasyokta saririnaha anashino prameyasya tasmat yudyasva bharata antavanta ime deha nijasyokta saririnaha Anashino prameyasya tasmat yudyasva bharata antavanta ime deha nityasyokta saririnaha anashino prameyasya tasmat yudyasva bharata Antavanta ime deha nijasyokta sharirinaha anashino prameyasya tasmat yujasva bharata Antavanta ime deha nijasyokta sharirinaha Anashino prameyasya tasmat yudyasva bharata antavanta ime deha nijasyokta saririnaha anashino prameyasya Tasmat yujashva bharata Antavanta ime deha Nijasyokta sharirinaha Anashino prameyasya Tasmat yujashva bharata You want to try, Paul? You want to try it? He's just reading. Antavanta ime deha Nijasyokta saririnaha Anashino prameyasya Tasmat yudyasva bharata. Please, would you like to chant? Antavanta ime deha Nijashokta saririnaha. Anashino prameyasya. Tasmad yujasva bharata. Antavanta imedeha. Nijashokta saririna. Anashino prameyasya. Tasma jujasva bharata. Would you like to try? You know this by heart, probably. It's 2:18. The material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity. It's on page 82. At least the copy I have here. Antavanta imedeha. Nijasyokta saririnaha. Anashino prameyasya. Tasmad yujasva bharata. Antavantaha. Perishable. Ime. All these. Deha. Material bodies. Nijasya. Eternal in existence. Uktaha. Are said. Sharirinaha. Of the embodied soul. Anashinaha. Never to be destroyed. Aprameyasya. Immeasurable. Tasmat. Therefore. Yudhyasva. Fight. Bharata. O descendant of Bharat. Translation. The material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore, fight, O descendant of Bharat. Purport. The material body is perishable by nature. It may perish immediately, or it may do so after 100 years. It is a question of time only. There is no chance of maintaining it indefinitely, but the spirit soul is so minute that it cannot even be seen by an enemy, to say nothing of being killed. As mentioned in the previous verse, it is so small that no one can have any idea how to measure its dimension. So from both viewpoints, there is no cause of lamentation, because the living entity as he is cannot be killed, nor can the material body be saved for any length of time or permanently protected. The minute particle of the whole spirit acquires this material body according to his work, and therefore observance of religious principles should be utilized. In the Vedanta Sutras, the living entity is qualified as light because he is part and parcel of the supreme light. As sunlight maintains the entire universe, so the light of the soul maintains this material body. As soon as the spirit soul is out of this material body, the body begins to decompose. Therefore, it is the spirit soul which maintains this body. The body itself is unimportant. Arjuna was advised to fight and not sacrifice the cause of religion for material, bodily considerations. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistang Stapitang Yena Butle Svayang Rupa Kadamayang Dadati Svapanantikang Vandehang Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalang Sri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitangscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadhara Srivasadi Ghora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Antavanta ime deha Nityas yokta sharirinaha Anashino prameyasya Tasmat yujasva bharata. So here Krishna is urging Arjuna to fight, and he's referring to him being the descendant of Bharat. Bharat was a great emperor of India, and is one of the reasons why in the latter days India was called Bharat Varsha. There's actually two Bharats. It's a little confusing. What I understand from Prabhupada, he actually said that, because you have Jat Bharat, we're discussing about his father in the morning, King Rishabh, and he will have a son. That will be Jat Bharat. So some say it's from there. Actually, Prabhupada, he makes that case. But there was a Bharat before that, and he was a great... also a great yogi, actually, great ascetic, and he became also the king. And he defeated a lot of people. He kicked out a lot of people, actually, out of India. And generally, in India, he is considered to be the Bharat. And as far as I understand, that is also where Arjuna is the descendant from. But like I said, it's a little... there's a little confusion. Prabhupada, I think Prabhupada makes the case that it's the Jat Bharat that made India famous. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, it's a little controversial topic. Yeah. No, there is another. I just explained it. There is two. Okay. Well, I read it differently as far as I remembered. But like I said, generally, this famous Bharat is considered to be the cause of Bharat Varsha. And my understanding is that is the descendant, Arjuna is his descendant. But sometimes Prabhupada says that this other Jat Bharat made India famous. So we were just discussing this morning that his father was the cause of so many sects, you know, that were offshoots, like the Jains and things like that. So that is not, that is also a sign that he's very famous. So, you know, like father, like son. Anyway, you can look it up later. Krishna is referring to Bharat, to Arjuna like that, because he wants him to fight. And that Bharat, like I said, he was quite aggressive in defending India, and he was like a great kshatriya. So here we have this word antavanta, so the perishable. Anta means end, and vanta means this is going. So it's going to end. So the material body of the... that is actually the antavanta ime deha. So these material bodies, they will all end. You see, the material body is perishable, but the soul is nitya. Nitya means eternal. Sharirinaha, of the embodied. Anashinaha is not nashina. Nashina means destroyed. Anashinaya, not destroyed, never to be destroyed. Aprameyasha, and he is immeasurable. That we discussed yesterday. It's not so much in the Sanskrit, as far as I can see here, but Prabhupada very much goes into it in the purport. And he quotes the Svetashvara Upanishad, where the dimension of the soul is given. Of course, yesterday was quite nicely explained by Bhaktivinoda Govinda Prabhu, that because it's spiritual, you can't actually measure it. Because he also explained, Prabhupada wrote this book about Easy Journey to Other Planets, and it's a book that was written quite early, I think in 1961 or something. And it was inspired by a news article about two scientists that won the Nobel Prize because they discovered like antimatter, something like that. So Prabhupada wrote this whole book about... well, the title means that if you perform Krishna conscious, then you can easily go to other planets. But not in this body, but you obtain another consciousness, and then you can get a suitable body. Like Prabhupada explains, you cannot stay in the water for long. You can have a tank or something, but after a few hours you have to get out. But the fish, they can stay there as long as they live. So similarly, we cannot stay long on the moon. But if we have the proper body, then we can stay on the moon as long as we live. So that is the idea. But the idea of the title. But the point he was making there is that you have antimatter and matter. And matter, that is how Prabhupada explained it, is material, and antimatter is spiritual. And he explained several of the Bhagavad Gita verses in that light. It's quite interesting to study it because he translates the Bhagavad Gita verses completely differently as they're translated here. And he translates them in the material and antimaterial. And he calls the soul antimaterial, like that. So, but the idea is that something that is spiritual, you cannot measure it. Like measuring, generally it's done by material instruments. So because it's spiritual, therefore you cannot measure it. That doesn't mean, however, that it doesn't have a size. It does have a size. The size is given here in the Svetashvara Upanishad. You take a hair, and then the tip of that hair you divide in 100 parts, and that one part you divide again in 100. That is the size of the soul. At least that's how it's described. I don't know scientifically if you would, because you know these are very ancient scriptures, and sometimes it's also to give an idea. I haven't really looked into it because actually now that I'm talking about it, I think in fact the atom, or now you have parts that are smaller than the atom, are most likely even smaller than that. But yeah, I have to look into that. I don't know. But the idea is that my understanding is the soul is the smallest particle in existence. It's even smaller than the smallest particle. So even if the, according to the scientists, the smallest particle is smaller than this, which is, I don't know how you... Yeah, yeah. No, but they give a specific size. You take the tip of a hair, you divide it in 100, that part you divide again in 100. So I'm not sure what the scientists say about the atom. Now they've discovered smaller particles than the atom. But you can take it from me that the soul is, whatever the scientists say, or whatever it says here, the soul is smaller. That is the, and that is also why it cannot be divided. Yes? Yeah, that's what the scientists say. Yes, because they have no. They also say that the universe is also eternal, that it is unending. Because they have no concept of Krishna. And in fact, I was discussing with Hanumat Prasad Maharaj, and I forgot which Huxley it was, but it's a famous family. But this was the scientific Huxley, and he admitted that all this scientific theories they made, because they were quite intelligent. He said ultimately it ended in illicit sex. He said it was like an excuse for us to deny the existence of God, because in those days God was very, very much present in Western society. And they basically defeated the so-called religious scriptures. Or at least they were thinking like that. And he admitted that the end result was that we were indulging in illicit sex. So, the point is that mainly the this is the beginning of science, more or less, these men. So my point is that these men, at least this man, Huxley, he was so honest to admit that that generally these scientists, they're just trying to deny God, and usually it results in illicit sex and so many other things to basically destroy the world. It's actually demoniac. Well, to say the least, it's a demoniac tendency. And Prabhupada used to say that most people are innocent, but there's a few demons, and they actually know what they're doing. Like, for instance, if you read about Hiranyakashipu, he knew exactly what he was doing. He knew about the Vedic scriptures. He knew that the soul was there. He knew that the body would end. And he demanded to Lord Brahma that you have to make me eternal. And of course, Lord Brahma explained, I cannot do that, but... And then he gave him this really weird benedictions. And he thought that, you know, he did it. But then Vishnu was a little bit smarter, and he killed him in the, you know, not in the air, not on the ground, not inside, not outside, not by an animal, not by a man, not by a weapon, but with his nails. All, you know, Vishnu completely kept Lord Brahma's word and at the same time destroyed Hiranyakashipu. So this is like the prime example. Of course, it's a real person, but Prabhupada uses it as an example of the, you know, for a demoniac person. So there are in fact persons like that, and they are not innocent. They are in fact demoniac. But most people, and these theories ultimately come from these kind of persons, and then they confuse people. Like Lord Shiva, he also confused so many people. Of course, Shiva is not a demon. He had a purpose. We discussed it this morning. His purpose was to bring the Buddhists back from their atheistic philosophy and to bring them back to the Vedas. And basically also what happened after that, all the Buddhists were basically kicked out of India. So that was more or less his mission. The point was that the concerning Lord Shiva, there were many intelligent people, and they got kind of confused. So most people, they're innocent, and so you can also have demons. Like many people were following Hiranyakashipu as well. We don't read it so much in Balaram because it's not very important. But because Balaram is only concerned with how you should have your consciousness when you die. And I'm not so much interested into worldly or, you know, universal politics. But you can imagine that so many people were just thinking Hiranyakashipu was a great guy. You know, he was really taking care of business. He gave him a lot of money. So similarly, you know, now also there are so many, not so many, like I said, it's a few percent, but there are demons, and they are very conscious of what they're doing. But most people, they're innocent. But they just follow these kind of demons. And like Huxley was admitting, yeah, we actually were doing it because we want to enjoy. And this is the tendency of the material conditioned soul, that he wants to enjoy. So it's like an excuse. Oh, this is some atheistic philosophy. Let me accept it. So that is where these scientists come from, and they have this theory that the universe is unending, and that the soul, or the, you know, that there is unending maximum, or whatever you want to call it, an unending minimum. But that is not a fact. The universe ends. We know that it's covered by earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego, and there's actually a few more layers if you read the Bhagavatam carefully. And then there is the spiritual world. And it's very clearly explained that in the spiritual world there's unlimited light particles. In fact, what I understand, the spiritual world is in fact unlimited. But the material world is limited. There's a shell, and it's called Durga. It's like a prison. You cannot get out. It's almost impossible to get out. And we are in fact in the spiritual world. It's like a cloud. And so if you read the information in Bhagavatam, all these particles of light, which is called the Brahma Jyoti, are in fact souls. And they're shining throughout the material world. This spiritual light is shining inside the material world, but we can't see it because we don't have the eyes. But the yogis, if you do yogic meditation, and I in fact did some yoga meditation, then you can in fact experience this. You know, like for instance, they say when you fall on your head and you see stars, it's a little bit like that. It's a little bit like that. This is actually what I understand is the Brahma Jyoti. And so this Brahma Jyoti, these are in fact souls, and these are the smallest particles, and they cannot be cut. That is what Krishna is saying. Because it's the smallest particle and it cannot be cut. Of course, if Krishna can cut it, Krishna can do anything. But this is how he constructed it. There is a limit. It's not like the scientists say it can go smaller, 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 smaller. I mean, maybe in theory you could say that, but I don't know. What I understand is that there is a particle where it ends. But at the same time, and that was explained yesterday, it is a spiritual particle, so you cannot see it with your material eyes. So the scientists will never ever discover it. Although I know in the past there have been experiments about, you know, some, I don't want to say weird scientists, but they were frowned upon by their colleagues. They were measuring bodies when they left their body, and the bodies were actually heavier after they died, after people died. In other words, Prabhupada explains that when the soul is still there, because it's spiritual, it kind of lifts up the body. And when it leaves, then it becomes like pure matter, and there's no more this energy. So there is some indication that the soul is there, but to actually prove it with material instruments, it's not possible. So we have to ultimately take information from the Vedas if we want to know about the soul, and that is what Krishna is telling us. That is also what Krunamaya was explaining, that in the Bible this information is practically not given. You have to go to Krishna, to the Vedas at least, and in this case to Krishna, to know about the soul, and like here it said, it is imperishable, indestructible, and in one sense, I think we explained it now, it's immeasurable. At the same time, it is measurable. It's kind of a chincha. It's kind of inconceivable. So what Krishna is saying here, you know, the material body is perishable, and the spiritual body is imperishable. So therefore, you might as well fight. You know, this is what he said in the beginning: asojan anvasojan stvang. You know, those who are learned, they mourn neither for the dead nor for the living. The material body is perishable by nature; it may perish immediately, or it may do so after 100 years. It is a question of time only. There is no chance of maintaining it indefinitely, as Hiranyakashipu was thinking, you know. But the spirit soul is so and many demons as well. Like we discussed in the previous days, like I don't know if it's true, but they said that Elvis, his body is still frozen. And there's I think Rockefeller also did it. There's a few people like that, and they got their bodies frozen. They think like that. They can be eternal. This is all foolishness. But the spirit soul is so minute that it cannot even be seen by an enemy, to say nothing of being killed. So Prabhupada is saying, you cannot see it, how you can kill it? So if you cannot see something, then it's impossible to kill it, basically. I mean, maybe if maybe you can, but the idea is that it's spiritual. So even if some other could slay it by, some divine, chance, then still it could not be cut, because it's spiritual. As mentioned in the previous verse, it is so small that no one can have an idea how to measure its dimension. I don't know. I can't find it in the Sanskrit that it's so small. It's imperishable. That's avinashi, and yeah, that's basically what it says. Avinashi, it's imperishable. Yeah. Well, Prabhupada says here that as mentioned in the previous verse, it is so small that no one can have any idea how to measure its dimension. But like I said, he explains it mainly in the purport, and he explains it with the Svetasvara Upanishad. So, maybe Prabhupada has some insight that I don't have. Right, well, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. That's not what he says. He says in the previous verse. So, but yeah, maybe he means in the purport of the previous verse. Let me just read it quickly for you. Yeah, Prabhupada says, the symptoms of the soul's presence is perceived as individual consciousness. And then he just quotes the Svetashvara Upanishad. Yeah, that we explained. Yeah. Anyway, so from both viewpoints, there is no cause of lamentation because the living entity as he is cannot be killed, nor can the material body be saved. Yeah, that is another interesting point that Prabhupada makes here, and actually Krishna, he's saying the body will die anyway because it's antavanta. There will come an end to it anyway. So you might as well kill it now. And you're not really killing because the soul you cannot kill. So Krishna is kind of giving different arguments to Arjuna. At the same time, he's preaching to us, saying the body is temporary and the soul is eternal. This is knowledge. Knowledge is what is real and what is unreal. Like you're in the college, for instance, this is what Plato was saying. This is knowledge. What is real and what is unreal. And Plato would explain, he said you have the world of being and the world of non-being. And the world of non-being is where we are now. Everything is changing. There was before Plato, there was another philosophy. He said, "Pantarai, everything flows." So it's a little bit impersonalistic, but Plato he elaborated on that. He says here everything changes, and in the spiritual world everything is fixed. Of course, he didn't know about rasa, about relationships. In that sense, it's not fixed at all, but it is eternal. And this world is temporary. It exhibits and then it goes back into Mahavishnu, like that, like a breath, like you breathe in and you breathe out. That's the material world. That's why the yogis, they stop the breath. This is how they want to become eternal. But this is all, yeah, you could say material. It's artificial, and you can't generally last. They can go up, like I said, to the Brahmajyoti. But ultimately it's boring because the soul by nature is ananda and it cannot fully enjoy this ananda unless it has a relationship, a rasa. It cannot just be there with all the other particles, and it's very alone, because these particles don't communicate. You're just there in the spiritual world as a light particle floating around. You can't see anything. It's like Prabhupada says, it's spiritual suicide. There's no suffering. There's no suffering, but there's some enjoyment because there's no suffering, but there's not this rasa, so there's no real enjoyment. So ultimately, you'll come down. The minute particle of the whole spirit acquires this material body according to his work, and therefore observance of religious principles should be utilized. Yeah, this is an interesting point. I'm not sure how it relates to the whole discussion here. But it's a very important point. Prabhupada says that by your karma, that's how you get the body. So therefore you should follow religious principles, because then you can get a good body. And everybody, not everybody, but most people in India, they know this. You know, and they're happy to go to the heavenly planets and then go back. This is called samsara, you know, and they're happy with it. They know. You know, let me just enjoy and then I'll come back. Like they save up for a trip to Hawaii. Many people do like that, you know, and then they have to come back to the gloomy weather of the Ardennes. So that is, it's not a solution, but it's definitely good. And we also know from Krishna that if you become sinless, then you become, you make yourself ready for a devotional service. Make yourself ready. You qualify yourself for the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, that mercy is causeless, but you need to be ready to accept that mercy. So therefore, religious principles, they should always be utilized. In the Vedanta Sutras, the living entity is qualified as light because he's part and parcel of the Supreme Light. Yeah, so these verses are, this whole Bhagavad Gita It's called Contents of the Gita Summarized, and the Gita itself is a summarization of all the Vedas, and specifically these verses. I haven't studied the Upanishad so much or the Vedanta Sutras, but many of these verses are almost identical with the Upanishads and with the Vedanta Sutras. So that's why Prabhupada, he relates it back to that. And it's very important, because the Vedanta Sutras are a little bit obscured, it's a little bit difficult, but if you relate them to these verses, then it becomes completely clear. Because here Krishna is speaking, and it's in context of Mahabharata, and the whole thing becomes clear. So you can connect these verses. As sunlight maintains the entire universe, so the light of the soul maintains this material body. Yeah, so the way I understand it is, for instance, sometimes you sit on your foot and it sleeps and then you can't feel it anymore. So my understanding is the soul is in the heart, and of course the soul is spiritual, so it can, you know, it's in one sense it's like all powerful. I think sometimes Prabhupada mentions that the soul can destroy the whole universe. Like you have atomic bombs and they can destroy like a whole country. So the soul, similarly, you can imagine that it has that power to do that. Because I mean, if you split up atoms and it can create such an explosion, what to speak of the smallest particle, spiritual particle, what that can do. But so the idea is that it's in the heart, and it spreads out the consciousness throughout the body. And what I understood is that it's that the blood is like a vehicle for that consciousness, and when it doesn't flow, then you cannot feel it anymore. At the same time, and this is where it gets interesting, sometimes people's hands are cut off or legs, and they can still feel it. Now my understanding is that is the subtle body. You see, because Prabhupada says this is simply a dress, and the dress, like you see this dress, it's according to my body. So similarly, the body is according to my subtle body. This is probably why I mentioned this karma thing, to get it really clear that you get the body through action, through consciousness, and the consciousness that the mind has, that is how the material body will be. So when you cut off the hand, there's still, they call it in medical science, like a phantom hand. And people can still feel it. And it can be very annoying. It can be very disturbing, actually. And they can do nothing about it. Some of them, they give drugs or something, but they can't really do anything about it. But at the same time, like I said, when everything is still attached and the blood doesn't flow, then some other, you can't feel it anymore. So I think that it has to do because the soul is inside the heart and it's attached some other to the blood. Yesterday we learned that it's also attached to the airs. So the airs also go through the nidis, like subtle parts, like we spoke about, this needle thing. This is what these Chinese do, acupuncture. So these are all these nidis that are everywhere. So the blood goes there. Nadis, I think nidis is it's also the star, or what is that? Nakshas or nakshatras. Yeah, so you have in the universe, you have the big, like they say the yogis, they can travel on sunshine and stuff like that. So you have subtle pathways in the universe. So similarly, you have subtle pathways in the material body. So, and when the blood gets cut off, then you can't feel it anymore because the air gets blocked, and so that consciousness, it cannot flow anymore. But the idea is the soul is sitting in the heart, and it shines that consciousness throughout the whole body. As soon as the spirit soul is out of this material body, the body begins to decompose. Therefore, it is the spirit soul which maintains his body. I mean, I must admit to you honestly that I've read this many times. I understand it much better than 15 years ago. But when I joined, I couldn't understand this. And then I became a little bit older. And then I couldn't understand why the so-called karmis didn't understand it. But it's a little bit difficult to grasp it in one sense. At the same time, it's so obvious. Like, I always give the example, you have one person and he breaks his neck on the last stairway, you know? And the other person, he crashes in a car and he's in a coma and he lives. And what is the deciding factor? The deciding factor is the soul. Like, I actually saw one devotee leave his body here in the temple room. And I actually knew he was gone. I actually think he went back to God, or at least to the heavenly planets. Was I think I felt like an airplane, And I just knew he was gone. I could see it. I saw him leave. And then they were pretty fast there, like 50 minutes. They pulled in a chopper and they went into the temple room and everybody had to get out. But I more or less knew that they were not going to save him. I was pretty convinced. I mean, you can always somehow bring him back, but I kind of knew that. No, you can, because sometimes the soul can go and then it can still come back. But I was convinced that he was on a plane. He was not coming back. Why would he come back? You know, he was gone. And I was right. You know, they couldn't bring him back. And like I said, they were pretty fast there. But it's the deciding factor is the soul. And like Prabhupada explains here, then the body starts to decay. And when the soul is there, it doesn't decay. It regenerates, rejuvenates. So it's so clear. If you think about that deeply, I mean, I don't know how people cannot grasp this point. But at the same time, if you eat meat and you're very gross, you cannot grasp it. And you don't want to grasp it because you want to enjoy. That I explained in the beginning. The body itself is unimportant. Arjuna was advised to fight and not sacrifice the cause of religion for material bodily consideration. So that's the ultimate point. Because sometimes people accuse Krishna of inciting Arjuna to be aggressive and to use violence. But he used violence what does it say here? For the cause of religion. And like Prabhupada says that, I forgot exactly what he said, but he was speaking about the Bible, that Christians were killing, you know, animals. So violence is condemned, but there can be controlled violence, violence for the cause of religion. So Arjuna was advised to fight and not sacrifice the cause of religion for material bodily considerations. Oh, this is my uncle, this is my father. But they were on the wrong side. They were on the side of Duryodhan, and as they say in America, he was the bad guy. And the bad guy needs to die. And the good guy needs to kill him. And this is what Arjuna will do at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. So I will end there. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Right. Yeah. Now I think, in fact, I also once read a comic book which was based on, myths, like Nordic myths. They also spoke about this threat, and definitely it's there for sure. Prabhupada also says when you sleep, then your subtle body goes somewhere else. Maybe not all the time. I don't know exactly how it works, but I believe that. And there's also people, they do this lucid dreaming, and they wake up in their dream, and then they can go places. But if you go in the wrong place, you can get captured by magicians or demons, and then you die. Then they kind of cut that cord. And that is also what you feel sometimes when you're in a dream. And you're in the dream and you want to stay there because it's so great. And then there's some noise and you feel actually like you're being pulled away into your body. So definitely the thread is there. And once it gets cut, that's it. That's it. That's when you hear peep. And that's the end. So that's a very good example. There's so much technology and still they cannot keep the body if it's gone. The body is there. The person is more or less healthy. Still, he's gone. It's the soul. Soul is gone. I mean, one last example I can give you. We're crying. Oh, my father, he's gone. But why, Prabhupada says, why are you crying? Your father is right there. Because the soul is gone. The person has gone. Anything else? Yeah. Well, we were chanting in an ecstatic kirtan led by Eka Chakra Grand Prabhu. And he was banging the mridanga like anything. And it was such a good kirtan, you know. And this person, he was jumping up and down in front of Radha Gopinath. And it happened here. Actually, where you sat. Maybe, yeah, I don't know. I think it was more there. Yeah, at first he was jumping here in front of Radha Gopinath. And then, yeah, I don't know exactly, because it was really ecstatic kirtan. And then he just, the way I remember it, he jumped up. Maybe it's a little bit embellished, but he jumped up and that was it. He had a weak heart, actually. Yeah, he had a weak heart. His parents knew about it. No, it was a heart attack. Yeah, he had a weak heart and he over exceeded himself. And he was a very, very serious devotee, actually. He knew he had a weak heart and he knew he could die anytime. And he was a very sincere devotee. And people knew him, said he never made any offenses. As far as I know, he never did. He was such a sincere person. And yeah, like I said, he jumped up, he had a weak heart, and he died, and we kept singing. Like a chakra gram, we kept singing. We only went out when the helicopter boys came. But then, like I said, he was already gone. Yeah, of course, Bhakta Paul. Yeah, very sweet character, yeah. Right, huh? I mean, you also can confirm that, right? Because you live with him. I didn't know him so long. Right. And he worked very hard, no? And he was doing Food for Life, no? Namahata preaching. Right. Huh? Cooked very well. Okay, oh, look at that. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was thinking also. I'm not such an esoteric person, but I think I felt like there was an airplane in the temple room and they took him. Yeah. But it could have been a heavenly airplane. I mean, sometimes I was speaking with Mardani Mataji, and sometimes you can say, I'm going to Paris. But, you know, usually we don't have like anti-gravity force and you're there immediately. You know, first you go to Brussels, and then you go to France, then you know, maybe you take a lunch break. So, you know, sometimes back to God, it can also mean that you're on your way. I mean, it's hard to say. But, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me for sure if he was going back to God. I think most devotees accept that. I just want to be a little bit careful because, you know, you never know, and otherwise it becomes a little bit sentimental, you know. Every rascal goes back to Godhead. you know, I mean, we have to be careful, you know. You know, you just chant Hare Krishna. And, I mean, Arjuna didn't went back to Godhead. He went to the Himalayas and he did severe tapasya. I mean, Ajamil. So it wasn't that, you know, it was just chanting once Hare Krishna and then he went back to Godhead. It wasn't like that. So it's not so easy. You have to change your consciousness. And consciousness is changed like an odor. Like if you have a bad smell in a room, it doesn't go away immediately. It takes some time. So consciousness is like that. It's like a smell. And it changes gradually. So, but it's possible, I guess, theoretically, but generally it takes time. So we should end on a high note. Anybody has was a little bit grim. You want to say something? Oh. Anyway, to end on a high note is that the consciousness takes time to change, but the idea is you can surrender any second. And that surrender is what Krishna is talking about. And in that sense, you can become Krishna conscious in a second. You can say, any moment you can say, Krishna, now I will surrender to you. Right. Right. No, I think we can say it, but at the same time, I just want to warn in general. I mean, about these two people, I'm pretty confident that they went. But at the same time, I'm also saying that going back to Godhead, it's a very wide saying. He can go to Chaitanya Lila, or he can go to Prabhupada, or you can go to Krishna Loka. You know, I don't know exactly. But I know one thing. If you keep chanting Hare Krishna, then you also go where Bhakta Paul is. Because he's definitely chanting Hare Krishna. And if you chant Hare Krishna, then you're already back to Godhead. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So now you should chant Hare Krishna.
Om Agyanati Merlasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Pandeham Shri Guru Shri Uttapada Kamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagajatam